Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we'll be with you for the next hour. Tonight's guest is a very interesting author, film producer, and talk show host in her own right. She has her own show on republicbroadcasting.org called Expansions, which airs, as I understand it, every Friday. And she has produced a wonderful film about 9/11. It's called 9/11 Mysteries. And now there are quite a few films out there. And she has gone into some detail on some of the more technical issues involving what occurred at 9/11 and many of the anomalies that happened after the events, the cover-up, as well as the planning of the event, the setting of explosives, the collusion between various international agencies, etc., etc., etc. And we're going to be talking about those things tonight. And with that, I would like to invite to Evident Footprints for the first time tonight's guest, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, how are you this evening?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, where do we begin? Okay, you like many other Americans, got to examine many of the anomalies of 9/11, and after some time, you came to the conclusion that it needed to be explored in a little bit more depth than some of the earlier videos that had been done, whether it was Alex Jones or Dylan Avery and his school buddies on the Loose Change videos. Rick Siegel came out with a pretty good video, I thought, 9/11 Eyewitness, and there were many, many others that came out, along with additional research from Dr. Judy Wood and John Hutchison, as well as the professor from Brigham Young University, and I'm trying to think of his name, Stephen Jones, I think his name is. So with all that information out there, what was it that compelled you to produce yet another 9/11 video?
Well, you know, you're not going to believe this, but I was asked to do that as a favor. So I said, okay, I would make the video. And the condition was that I make it like chocolate going down somebody's throat, meaning that it had to be very easy to absorb. It had to be of a higher quality than the videos that were out there because many of them were homemade. And although the material was very sound, a lot of people in the mainstream who are used to watching productions that are really made from deep pockets, and lots of money, that type of audience is not willing to forgive some of the crudeness of videos that are made by people who are doing this for the first time. And even though I was a first time video maker, I was not going to stop at my own limitations. So I hired out and made a production that cost an arm and a leg, literally. I mean,
so you have one arm and one leg now, you're saying.
That's right. I'm lame. Financially, it was an enormous undertaking. And being a perfectionist, I wanted to do it right, so I didn't stop. And this one small favor that I was doing for somebody pretty much changed my life.
Okay. I've had people ask me to do favors from time to time. And I guess what I'm about to ask you is, who is this person that asked you to do this favor? I mean, that's quite a big investment to make as a favor for someone.
That's right. This person is Brad. He's the individual who begins the video, the self-termed conservative Republican. And
okay.
He and I were actually doing a live presentation, also called 9/11 Mysteries, in Southern California, which we did in the spring and summer of 2005. We did have a run, an invitation to the Met Theater in Hollywood. We did a six-week stint there. And then there was some attention that we got worldwide because American Free Press had been one of our sponsors, and a lot of people from different parts of the world and the country wrote us emails and said, I can't come to L.A., so how can I see this thing that you're doing? And do you have a DVD? So Brad asked me after our little theatrical endeavor to put the DVD together. And I didn't really want to because I didn't know how. And he said, just do it. Please do it. We need it. And you're going to do a good job. I know you are. So I said, all right. So that was basically the favor. And then once I began, you know, it was that you fall into the self-made trap of starting something and then deciding that you're going to finish it no matter what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the favor. And on some level, Brad, who's very intuitive, knew that this would work out. I didn't really know until I started making the video with my... I went through a number of video editors, and I ended up with a very talented young man called Kent Oberlin. And when I had worked with him just on 5 minutes of editing, I knew this was it. This was going to be it. He was the guy, and we were going to do it, and it was going to work out.
Well, I have to tell you, now, thank you for sending me a copy of it. I guess there's bootleg copies out there in the real world, and they leave a lot to be desired, as you know. And I appreciate being able to study it and you know, observing the production itself. It's very clean, very professional. The mix, the audio mix, everything, you know, is professional. There are some questions, and of course, I would recommend to anyone to go to your website and order this. I understand that you were considering coming out with a second one as well, or a part two, and I'm not trying to jump the gun before we discuss what part one is about, but it's generally a good idea to invest in this if you really want to see many of the things that have been kept out of the media. There are a few questions that I have for you, Sophia, and I'm just wondering, in light of the fact that you spent so much time going into many of the issues of the buildings and the fact that they really needed to be overhauled, they needed to be renovated from top to bottom because of all the asbestos and the fact that Larry Silverstein took out this humongous insurance policy and I think it was about 6 weeks prior to 9/11, which should be a red flag instantly. When that many people are killed in such an event, it's easy to pawn it off by covering it up with a commission, number one. And I was interested in how they put the commission together. I was wondering if you looked into that at all, if that was ever a consideration, or even the revelation that Donald Rumsfeld made before Congress the day before 9/11 when he mentioned that there were $2.3 trillion that they couldn't account for at the Pentagon. Are you familiar with any of that?
Dov Zakheim is the person who spirited away that money. What the 9/11 movement and the American public must start looking at is the role of Israel and Zionism in 9/11. That's what they're not willing to look at.
Okay, I'm in agreement with you on that.
That's
on that
right.
Factor.
So when they're ready, when they're more open for that, that will be the time for sequels to 9/11 Mysteries to come out. But until then, there's no point.
Okay. Did you study Frank Lowy at all? Do you know who he is?
Frank Lowy.
Or Lowy?
Yes. From the Malls. Silverstein Properties operates in tandem with Frank Lowy.
Okay, do you know anything else about him?
He's Australian.
Yes. Do you know anything more about his business dealings?
No. I mean, I have some rudimentary knowledge, but I'm not going to pretend that it's extensive.
Okay. The reason why I asked is I see him playing just as big a role as Larry Silverstein in the background. And that's kind of why I brought that name up. I know you didn't mention him in the video. You did mention Silverstein and the poll statement where he said, well, you know, they're going to pull the firemen, when in reality that's terminology for demolition, when they say pull it. And it has to do with bringing the building down. It's
one of the terms used. Nobody quite knows why Silverstein made that statement.
Well, I think it was a flub. I think it was a mistake, and the truth came out in that mistake. It was a misstatement that he didn't intend to make, let's put it that way. The reason I brought up Frank Lowy is he was an Israeli commando going back as far as 1954.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting that he would be the second wealthiest man in Australia after Rupert Murdoch.
Mm-hmm.
And that he owns a series of malls and shopping centers around the world. In fact, in the United States, he owns a company called Westfield Properties.
That's right, Westfield Shopping Town. They're all over.
Yes, and in fact, he bought 8 malls from Dick Jacobs just within about a year or so after 9/11. Maybe it was a little bit later than that. Could have been a couple of years, but I know somewhere around the time when this insurance settlement went down, he bought 8 malls from Dick Jacobs, the former owner of the Cleveland Indians, also known as the Jacobs crime family from Buffalo. They had a race track for dogs in several states. They were racing greyhounds. They were heavily into gambling. And they're heavily into sports concessions with the Bush family. So all these people are tied together.
That's right. And Silverstein made money in the pornography and nightclub industry.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they call the Jewish mafia.
Yes. So this is not just someone who happened to just be leasing this business space.
No, none of it is circumstantial. It's all part of an agenda and a plan long in the making. And the players are all heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, light people who skipped into a scene and happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time or the right place at the right time. So, again, the world at large isn't aware that players with deep pockets and long range agendas like this actually collude to shape history as we know it. And that's the task in front of us. It's not so much who did it right now. It's to open the consciousness of the people of the world toward the fact that the lives they live are largely illusory.
Oh, I think they're completely illusory. Actually, I'm not slighting those that who are awake. I'm saying basically everything on this planet is based on an illusion.
That's right.
Everything centers around money.
Well, that's a simple way of putting it. But we have a little bit of decision making ability. We affect our lives on a moment-by-moment basis. But the design of our lives is already something that we're participating in without our real knowledge or even agreement. That's
mm-hmm.
the thing. We're not agreeing to do what we're doing, but we're doing it anyway because we're asleep.
Yes, I agree. I agree there. I think you know that about me from our having appeared on Michael Herzog's show last week. One thing, and I'm wondering, you know, because you did a lot of research into what was really going on behind the scenes in New York. Were you aware of the position that the New York and New Jersey port authorities had in regard to who owned the building? Or I should say the buildings and as far as trade, WTC 1, 2, and 7?
Well, I know that Silverstein was the owner and original builder of 7. And this World Trade Center thing was actually a sort of wheeling dealing. They called it Trade Center so that it could be exempt from taxes, but it wasn't really a trade center. Because the Port Authority controls literally ports and airports, and why it was controlling those buildings really didn't fit with the scope that the Port Authority had, by my understanding.
Yeah, my knowledge of port authorities is that they can claim a certain territory is tax exempt, and that would be one reason why they had that. Now, my understanding of the whole World Trade Center complex is that it was owned by the port authorities of New York and New Jersey.
Right.
If Larry Silverstein was the owner, explain to me why he would have leased his own building from himself if he owned it.
I think that was just the one building, and that was added later. The original complex was owned by the Port Authority, and it was conceived of by, and now I am forgetting, this is terrible, but you're making me go way back into my research, Rockefeller.
David Rockefeller,
yes.
I think, wasn't it?
Yes, and Silverstein's building was added later, and it's very possible that the term pull it was so familiar, pulling to Silverstein, because it may have been rigged from the outset, that means 1985, to be taken down instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he made this gaffe or flub is still unknown. The reason why is unknown, but he was very familiar with a certain type of terminology, and who knows what, how that building was created and for what purpose and how long it was slated to live.
Mm-hmm.
But it was added later.
Yes.
So it's possible that, you know, there were other extenuating conditions and circumstances to that Port Authority complex. Again, I am not a researcher per se. I did a lot of research for 9/11 Mysteries, and there was some original material in there that I found, particularly with regard to the bumps and thumps at the end, you know, those suspicious people
mm-hmm.
who were making all those noises, and what was that all about? The Scott Forbes material, I interviewed him, and I was the first person to really interview him about that, and I managed to jog his memory by virtue of just having the conversation. And when you have a conversation and you start really like fielding things that have been dormant in you for a long time, very interesting things come up. So Forbes was able to draw out from his memory bank some things that he had never thought of before.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell together and they formed the last part of my movie. It went over the heads of a lot of people in 9/11. They really, you know, the movie is very dense in terms of its content. It's a movie that bears watching many, many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch it now, and I've seen it dozens of times, I still find things in it that I didn't know, although I'm the one who put all those things in the movie. But they are adding up in ways that they never added up before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
yes.
understanding really is. It's about seeing and then seeing again and seeing again and always seeing on a different level. And so from seeing, we get to knowing. And that's all the path of expanded consciousness. And that's where we really have to go with this. This is not about logic and analysis and figuring out who did it, because that's not going to help us.
Yes, I agree, and I would agree that I particularly was interested in the scene that you just described, where, for the listeners' sake, there were these anomalies going on in the building above this gentleman's business, and he actually went up there, and he had heard all kinds of heavy-duty construction going on, and then when he went up in and looked into that office suite, it was empty. And
which says, Don, I'm going to quiz you now. So let's just describe this for the listeners. Scott Forbes was an employee at Fiduciary Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 98th floor, which was the floor above him, there was a company called Aon that had been vacated for office upgrading. So what does office upgrading mean? The World Trade Center was O-shaped, the floor layout, like a donut, square donut. So office upgrade means you move some cubicles around. And how long does that take? And Scott Forbes heard the most amazing sounds up there for weeks. Drilling, thumping, pounding, heavy equipment being, you know, unloaded with a giant thud. And his ceiling shook above him. And one day he was compelled to wander up and take a look. And he expected to see all kinds of stuff going on. Construction. And he saw nothing. It was whistle clean. Nothing. Nothing. Not a wire. Not a scrap of drywall. Nothing. So where was it all happening? Do you know?
Oh, I would say inside the walls and probably inside the floors, even.
Behind the walls. That's it.
Yes.
Out of sight.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was going on one floor, was that going on other floors is the question. Now, there's a tremendous mind control going on post-9/11 with people who worked in the World Trade Center. I don't know if you're aware of that.
But oh, yes. Yes.
They're not allowed to talk about the event. They're not allowed to revisit the event and discuss it. They've been urged to move on. So we don't get these disclosures from anybody like that made by Scott Forbes.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to, by any chance, Sophia, speak with Andrew Grove or Richard Andrew Grove?
Yes.
As he's.
Yes, I've talked to him. But
okay.
He has a whole, you know, enormous rabbit hole of information. And
yes.
I met him after I made the movie.
Oh, okay. I heard his dissertation, I guess you could call it. He prepared something like a 2 or 3 hour reading of what he had transcribed from all the events that had occurred. He was working as a programmer in the building, and when he had pointed out some anomalies that he had found, so, you know, he's probably talking about the put options. And the derivatives and the hedge funds that are still in the news today. And he had been fired. What's really strange is that they were planning on getting rid of him, that he was invited back to talk about the things that he had seen as if this was going to be handled once and for all, and he was going to air his grievances about being improperly fired because he exposed some corruption. When they were trying to lure him in there during a coffee break meeting, yes, just to get him out of the way.
Right.
Now, he described having seen the gold being taken out of the lower levels of the Trade Center. And I found that to be interesting. So it was a bank robbery at the same time. It was a cover-up of all of this corruption that had occurred. In the brokerage firms, Cantor Fitzgerald being one of them as well. So are you planning on interviewing him for part two or bringing any of his information forward?
I don't know. His information would probably belong in Who Benefits, the third part. But again, you know, I'm not producing part two right now. I don't have the desire to spend 6 figures on a video and do what I did before. Nobody's asking me for a favor at this time. And again, like I said, the fruit has to be ripe enough for the Americans to bite. And it's not ripe yet. And I don't know if I'll be the one that makes the sequel. Again, you know, we're all ephemeral in this, if you want to call it a movement. When I disappear, somebody else will come along. And It's just the nature of it. It's an evolution. So it's not critical that I make my next movie. It doesn't matter.
Well, maybe you could ask the favor of the person who asked you. Ask him to make it.
He's not going to do it.
You won't do that, huh?
Nope. I don't know whether that's the next movie I should make. I've done a lot of visibility work. I've made visibility tools that are very popular. And I'm as happy with those as I am with having made this movie. There's all kinds of ways to spread the information. We don't just need movies.
Yes, I know. Now, you know what ran through my mind as I watched your take on that day and the events that followed was the role that the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, played in this whole thing. Literally, it was put in paper, in book form. It was put forth as this should be our Reichstag fire, like the one that Hitler used to take over Germany and blame it on someone else. He did exactly the same thing. And there's documentation of that. What is your take on that group and what power they might hold? Of course, they did that for the Council on Foreign Relations, so we know they're involved, and again, there's an Israeli connection.
Again, I'm not an expert on this, and I don't want to comment at this point. So, we know who runs the country. That's all.
Well, would you share that with us?
No.
There seems to be a mystery about it.
There's no mystery.
Well, who are you saying? Are you saying the bankers?
I don't want to discuss it further. I told you the fruit isn't ripe.
Well, I don't understand your distaste with the topic. I mean, you just made a movie about
it. It's not distaste. I'm just not going to continue a long discussion about this. I'm not an expert. I'm not going to sit here and give opinions as to who I think did what.
Okay, but you made a very poignant statement that we know who runs the country. I'm just asking, who is that?
I'm not going to continue to discuss it.
I see. Okay. What would you like to discuss? Can I ask you that, Sophie?
Well, you and I had discussed the topic of consciousness and raising consciousness. If we open the consciousness of the people, they will start to see things and put things together. We can't tell people who and what. We have to wait until they want to connect those dots themselves. So all we can do is invite them to open their minds. And it's all about invitation. It's not about instruction. I think that one of the things that 9/11 Mysteries does is it invites people to begin thinking for themselves, because it puts some things out there that are laws of science, and those things don't change from day to day. So when people start understanding that physics is physics and free fall speed is what it is, and they look at those videos and they understand that the explanation that was given to them doesn't fit what they're really seeing in those videos now that they have a tiny bit of knowledge, then they become independent in their thinking. That's what I am aspiring to do. I want to see if the public will become independent in their thinking. And they'll figure it out. Don't you think?
Well, it's a possibility. I'm just thinking, I invited you to the show so you can enlighten my listening audience. They can make that decision on the basis of what you say or what I say. Of course, we don't ask them to believe what we say. I prefer that, and I often counsel them that I recommend that they do research and that they open their minds and think outside the box, all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in agreement on that.
And that's what I'm interested in discussing.
Okay.
Is what are ways to open people up rather than create their thoughts for them? rather than tell them things. We always say, you know, I came from fiction writing, and I wrote a couple of novels. And in novels, you always show, you don't tell. And if your characters are telling the story, then that's no good. You want to show the story. So all we can do is show things. We can't tell things. Filmmaking is the same.
Well, films are often narrated. I mean, the narrator is often telling the story. I think in a way, that's what you did in your film. You're representing it with factual information, of course. You have interviews. You have pictures. You have some graphics, some analysis, and some discussion about these things. So in a way, you are telling a story. You may see it as merely presenting facts, but you've put it together in a story-like fashion.
That's called the narrative arc. That's not telling people what they should be thinking and understanding. That's a different level of telling. It's a design. You design the unfolding of the story, but the story has to tell itself. These are nuances of the trade, you could say, but they're very important. And I think because I was a fiction writer, it was not difficult for me to write a documentary script, because fiction is much harder than nonfiction. So all I had to do was take this enormous amount of information and figure out a way to arrange it so that it unfolded. Because that's what telling is about. Telling is unfolding. And the thing is doing it itself.
Okay, let's say that that's true. The mainstream media had an explanation for what happened. And obviously someone told them what to report about the events. And so if we're to accept the facts, whether it's a narrative or it's a story or if it's just a list of facts, many of which have been disproven already, and we could start with the 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, for one thing. The story about a passport lying on the street two blocks away from the World Trade Center. One of the passports that just happened to fly out of a building that was converted to literally powder and molten metal to where you couldn't even find body parts. And then on Al-Qaeda, a CIA creation, just the endless fiction that went on. Is that storytelling, or is that a narrative, or is that just improper facts?
Well, again, you're kind of mixing up all your terms. I'm talking about the creation of a piece of art, and the story that the mainstream media put out was not a piece of art.
Okay. I'm not disputing whether or not a movie is a piece of art, or music, or anything like that. I'm speaking more of the content in terms of the specifics. I mean, you could have put pictures up of buildings that are just totally obliterated, lying on the ground, and not had any narrative, and not really made any sense out of anything, but you brought out facts. So in a sense, you did tell a story. At least you gave a different interpretation of what we were seeing.
Okay,
and you supported it with facts.
A story is an organic thing. It has a life of its own, and it creates itself. And you can take any part of a story and examine it, and then another part of that story, and it all starts to come together. The mainstream media's story, which I'll put in quotation marks, doesn't come together anywhere, none of it. It's not organic. It's a complete fiction. It doesn't have a basis in any kind of cohesion. There's none. So you can't compare the two.
Well, that's exactly why I brought up the question.
But that theirs isn't a story.
Yeah.
It's a story in a different sense of that word. We're talking about different terms here, and you can't confuse them and mix them up and say one is the other and the other is the one, because they're not. They're not the same.
No, I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying. I'm saying that you addressed the issues squarely and honestly, and revealed information that wasn't in the mainstream story, nor was it in any other videos.
I mean, some information I had in my video that wasn't in other videos, but that was because I happened to go into certain areas and take out certain, find certain bits of information, and I thought that they were valid, and I included them. But that's not really to, you know, minimize other people's work. Yeah. I just happened to have the chance to do a 90-minute film on demolitions, which a lot of other people didn't do. They did the whole 9/11 tableau, and I kept mine to the buildings in New York. And the science. Because that's a slam dunk. I mean, you don't need to know the rest of 9/11, but hopefully people will become curious and say, well, what about Shanksville, and what about the Pentagon, and what about all these other places? And then they'll start to see that those quote-unquote stories don't hang together either. But all you need to know is free fall speed, 9.8 meters per second squared acceleration. You need to know a little about resistance, and you need to know a little about fire and steel, and that's enough, and that takes 5 minutes to explain, tops. So I devoted 90 minutes to this in order to make the case carefully and very patiently and clearly with music and witness testimony so that there couldn't be any issue. So the government story is simplistic, and it doesn't work. And that story in quotation marks. And it falls apart all the time. And their only answer to that is, well, it's un-American for you not to believe this.
Yes, I'm familiar with all that. I noticed in one point in the film, you actually used some of the footage from Rick Siegel's movie, 9/11 Eyewitness.
It's not his movie, okay? That needs to be understood. That movie was made by other people.
Okay, whose movie is that?
The movie was made by Dave Shaw of Blue Star Media Group. Dave Shaw arranged with Rick Siegel to use his footage in a film called 9/11 Eyewitness. Rick Siegel did not make 9/11 Eyewitness. He simply
did Rick Siegel do the shooting of the video?
He shot footage that, this is what he says, he shot the footage, the virgin footage of the demise of the towers from Hoboken, and then he arranged with other people to make a movie called 9/11 Eyewitness, but he did not make the movie.
Okay, well, I'm speaking about the filming of the movie. Did you notice anything anomalous in the video footage that he took? And I'm not speaking about the production and the studio enhancements and the zooms and the analysis of the sound waves and all of that. I'm speaking specifically about when the helicopters were flying near the towers. Did you notice any anomalies at that time?
I don't know what you mean about anomaly, by anomaly.
Well, I watched the video numerous times, and in fact, I have a copy of it, and I studied when the helicopters were flying around the backside of the buildings, which is what was not made available to the average person who has seen any video of 9/11. We get these shots that seem to be up from a tower. It's as though the press set up their cameras from the same vantage point, almost. All the press, other than the BBC. And the particular event I'm speaking about, or anomalies, were two separate events where a black chopper flew near the very top of the building and shot a what appeared to be a particle beam or some sort of pulse weapon. You see a flash of light, the chopper pulls out away from the building, and then the building collapses. that they used that technology to instigate the beginning of the fall of the building, or possibly just to set off charges that may have been even up on the roof. Now, that happened twice in that video. And I thought it was very interesting, because he did close-ups of that. And there is definitely complicity in whoever was flying those choppers.
Right. The filmmaker, who is not Rick Siegel, points out that there is a chopper that flies overhead, and then my recollection is they state that it looks like they're lowering a line. Now, I don't know if you construe that line to be the pulse beam, as you call it, but I remember this statement that it looks like they're lowering a line to the roof.
So. No, that's not at all what I saw. I saw a flash of light that was a burst or a pulse of light, sort of very white and rounded as it came out. And it was pretty wide. It didn't look like it was coming from a laser beam, let's say, or a line. It was a blast that sprayed outward.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in a somewhat cylindrical shape or oval shape, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that could be.
Yeah, twice I saw that. Now, I'm not faulting you for not having that in your movie. I think it's something, I think you were going to do something on the craft in part two, if I remember correctly.
Mean the hijackers and planes?
Yeah.
Yes, I wasn't going to focus on what happened at the towers that much in terms of, other than the airplanes, the supposed airplanes. But you're right, the helicopters are a form of... air carrier, I guess.
Okay.
Transport.
Now there was also a flying disc in a Fox News reel that was a short clip. It was maybe 30, 45 seconds, something like that, where you see the second plane hit, and the angle is, the plane is hitting from, the plane is coming towards you, but it hits what appears to be the back of the building. You can't really see it, that frontal shot that they show. And you see it coming through the other side of the building, and all of a sudden a disc appears, and it appears to have fired a rocket at Building 7 right before it shoots out.
At Building 7?
Yes. At a 45-degree angle, there is what appears to be a brownish or a reddish, it's moving fast, but shooting down at a 45-degree angle at the area of Building 7. And then the disc moves out from behind the tower, and then it takes off, and in midair it just disappears before it reaches the horizon. Very interesting video. That was on a Fox News network. And I've seen that several times, and other people have seen that. So now, that's not the only place it appears. I have a collection of photos, and they're posted on my website, directlightproductions.com, on my photos page. And these photos show some incredible anomalies in the smoke and the clouds of the debris and from the fire. There are demonic manifestations that appear in these clouds. If you zoom in on those photos, it will blow your mind. So this was something that had a lot of, we could say, satanic or black magic behind it, too, which we know these secret societies use. And these were taken from a chopper. These are chopper photos. These are actual military photos. One of the photos has a person flying through the air after they left from the building. It's really sad to see this, but
mean flying through the air after they leapt from the building?
Oh, yes.
Flying like a bird?
Well, I'm using a figure of speech. They're flying through the air on their way to splattering on the ground,
they're falling through the air. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, they're not going to make a safe landing, let's put it that
no,
way.
No, I know. But when you speak about demonic faces and that kind of thing, and then I heard somebody's flying through the air, I was connecting
was
it
person.
With things that aren't logical.
Oh, yes.
So that's why I ask you.
I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the faces are recognizable figures in history. And I've had people look at these, and they agree. And also, the disc I mentioned is in one of the photographs.
Hmm.
So you may want to take a look at those. And they've been up on my website for several months now. People know that they are there, but I'm going to do my own video presentation and really analyze those photos. Because when you zoom in on them, you see some of the most incredible manifestations that you can imagine. We are dealing with principalities and powers of a very demonic nature in that whole event. This was not just a political move. This was not just murder. This was something that was planned and conjured over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Where do we go from here? What would you like to see happen? I know you would like to recoup some of the money that you invested. Do you want to give out your website address so that people can order your video?
Well, at this point, maybe a lot of people have already seen it, but there might be people who haven't. It's 911mysteries.com. And if you go to the store, I actually have an online store that sells a large array of videos. I started with a large quantity of 9/11 videos, but I've branched into other subjects now, and I'm actually limiting my 9/11 selection. So it's the web store is avatarproducts.com, and it's accessible through the 911 Mysteries website. So anything that anybody wants to buy from that store will support me. I do sell 9/11 Mysteries in bulk, and it's very reduced, the price. And what people, you know, there's a bootlegging market out there, and what I try to make clear to the bootleggers is that if they bootleg 9/11 Mysteries, I have no incentive to make any other movie, because I didn't do this so that I could feed a pirate's market. I know that the information is important and must be gotten out, but in order to build a better world, we have to return something positive to the individual that went to length to create what we are now availing ourselves of. And that relationship does not appear to be clear to the activist movement. They, on some level, think that anything is up for grabs. And as long as it's imparting information, they can use it and exploit it in any way that they want. And to me, that violates the principle of return and exchange and honor. And therefore, the person who is being used in this way is not going to do it again. Because like Bush said, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on all of us. What did he say?
Yeah, he also said, if you're not for us, you're against us.
Yes. Well, Bush is a mind-controlled character, so what he's saying, he doesn't say, really, out of himself.
That's mm-hmm.
And we're all mind-controlled. I mean, we're all the result of a shaping program. And so it takes the flexing of a muscle, which is our consciousness, to keep us in our own power. If we don't flex that consciousness muscle, we will abdicate our power to another.
What is your, in closing here, we're basically out of time, but I feel like I want to ask you one more question, if I may do that.
Sure.
What is your aspiration once we all awaken to the truth of 9/11? Many are awake already, but many people feel powerless because they're searching for that solution, that's going to shift this paradigm and bring about justice and bring about a healthy change.
Well, we have to reinvent the world. I mean, we cannot bring about justice in the old world. Oh, well, we have to make those guys suffer for what they did to us. That doesn't belong in the new world. The new world is not going to have room for those people. They're not even going to be in it. We have to make a new world, period. And if we're going to do it, we have to wake up first so that we can do it awake instead of asleep. Because asleep, we're in their world.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, definitely.
So it doesn't matter. I don't care about bringing people to justice. I don't talk like that myself. It's a waste of time. It's more energy thrown down the same, you know, hole. We have to make this W-H-O-L-E. And that means we have to start all over.
Well, it'll be interesting how that transpires, won't it?
I know, and I couldn't possibly begin to tell you what I see in that regard, because I can barely see anything. I can only see what I have to do from one day to the next. And that is just to invite people.
Some. Yeah, that's more than some. Some people are just trying to figure out what to do today.
So. Yeah. There is a lot. Inspiration is the best, you know, pill we can take. Inspire yourself or someone else, or be inspired by someone else. I mean, that's it. That's all it takes.
Well, we're out of time. I appreciate your message. And would you come back sometime?
Anytime.
Okay. I'd be interested also if you can let us know, or let me know from time to time, if you're going to be speaking anywhere or there are going to be any special viewings of your film in any part of the country, if people want to know. I know you may post those things on your site as well, but, I'll give you a plug on the show.
Well, thank you. I think that the day for that is kind of over now. The movie is out. It's been out for a while, and the interest in screening it with me there to speak is really not alive anymore. And there are reasons for that. But it's okay. I understand how the world works, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to do something different, or we're all going to have to do something different. And then we can each plug each other.
Yeah. Well, I'm in agreement with you. So I want to thank you for the time you spent. Late in the evening, early morning where I am here, but it's much appreciated, and I appreciate your candor and your spirit and the work you did, and I wish you a lot of success. Hopefully, being on the show will help you move some more of those DVDs.
Yes, that would be great fun. So thank you, Don, for this evening with you. It was nice to meet you, and I'll be happy to talk to you again.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
All right. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest this evening was the producer of 9/11 Mysteries and the host of Expansions on Republic Broadcasting Network. Her name is Sophia Smallstorm, and my name is Don Nikoloff, and I would like to thank Seth for the audio tonight and Don Newsom for making this show possible. And most of all, I'd like to thank you folks for tuning in. Tell your friends about the show. We always can use more listeners. And in the meantime, I want to wish you a peaceful, light-filled, and joy-filled night and a good night.